Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Today is July 5th, 2015. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 17,918, the NASDAQ at 4859, and the S&P at 2099. We are live this evening. You can reach us at 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. And a nice reminder that we are always available at wdiy.org. It's a lovely evening tonight, beautiful sunny weather, but I imagine many of us are staying in our cars a little longer because of the air conditioning or trying to get home as soon as we can to get into the air conditioning. Nonetheless, stay tuned to WDIY for the show, Your Financial Choices. We are talking tonight about having conversations with your family about your financial situation. This could mean discussing financial situations with your spouse, your adult children, minor children, parents, siblings. It's about how do we have those discussions and why is it so important to have them. So we're going to be talking about that. And in fact, if you have questions regarding how to approach some of these situations, you're welcome to give us a call at 610-758-8810. As I mentioned, we are live. We will take your questions. Judy Ann's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Excuse me. Last week we talked about transitions in life that we go through that may affect us financially. And I was thinking about the topic for this week and I thought, you know, related to that is having an open dialogue about your financial situation and your financial decisions with those closest to us. So imagine going through transition and change, and if you've not been forthright in maybe your financial situation, it's going to make having that conversation perhaps a little bit more difficult. So I want to talk about where I have seen some miscommunication issues, who are the parties related to those, and then give a few stories about some of those situations. And then as we get toward the end of the show, talk about some of the ways we can approach conversations. Why is it important? Just kind of the questions you can ask and raise, and then some techniques or strategies to use with young children as well. All right. So where have I seen some miscommunication causes? You know, what causes some of these issues? And let's start with spouses. What we have seen maybe in the older generations is one has all the understanding of the financial situation and the other one just is not the financial spouse. That may have been traditional roles, perhaps for our grandparents. And it was accepted in some regard that traditionally the male was taking care of the finances and the female would take care of the household. That really isn't always the case, as many of you know. Sometimes the female is that financial caretaker person who understands the numbers. So it's not always gender specific, but those are the traditional roles. One of the things that happens, though, sometimes is, generations ago with our grandparents, perhaps that was accepted. What I have seen evolve over the past probably couple decades is more of a balance that's expected in that financial know-how, that financial knowledge, such that if one spouse is kept in the dark about their finances, it may actually raise suspicions or a feeling of incompetency. So sometimes we're not doing that non-financial spouse a favor by protecting them from not, having to deal with the finances or, I don't want to stress them out. That's not always the case. That could actually cause elevated anxiety for a number of reasons. Again, it could be, God bless you, John. It could be that they are suspicious of why you're not telling them, or they might feel like, well, gosh, I don't know anything. And you really want to engage your partner in your financial decisions and discussions so that they are up to snuff on everything in case something happens to you. At death, what happens sometimes when one partner has been kind of kept in the dark is, if it is the survivor, then they feel quite a bit of anxiety or even abandonment. I have heard a number of spouses say, how could they leave me? Why did they leave me and not tell me any of this? I didn't know it. And it's just not a good situation to put someone in. What if it's a second marriage and there are children from the prior relationship? So again, we're talking about spouses and miscommunication issues. Do you know where you will stand if something happens? So you're married, your spouse has children from another marriage, maybe you don't have any yourself, or maybe you have your own, but what's going to happen if you have a home with this spouse, or, bank accounts, or you're expecting to get a pension or retirement monies, and you think this is how it's going to work? Do you really know? You might not. It might not be what you think. I'm going to tell you about some stories that might happen. Are you not only having the conversations, but also reviewing the documents and making sure they're executed? And that story I'm going to tell you about a little later in the show is right to this point. So sometimes you think you're having the conversations. You're saying, we're going to do this, spouse. I'm going to make you the beneficiary of this. You are the beneficiary of this. When in fact, maybe you actually have not executed the documents. So you want to make sure that you're not only having the conversations and that both parties understand the financials. You also want to make sure that you're, verifying that what you've agreed to is actually executed, taken out, written down, paper. Another area of miscommunication I see is with adult children. They may feel that their parents have the money to help them out, and conversations are littered with hints of need, like, oh, mom and dad, I'm really struggling, can't make ends meet, because you think your parents have the money. Then the parents feel guilty and they want to help and they don't want to disclose their own financial situation. They don't want to tell their kids maybe it's not so easy for them to help out. So you want to be careful of that. Or adult children assume their parents are financially stable and then later discover that they are in financial stress. And then the adult children may want to step in and help, causing issues with their own finances or relationships within their own family. So you may have a situation where you find out mom or dad are really in hardship and you need to help with medical costs or, paying for their living expenses. And then your own spouse gets upset because you're diverting your own retirement or cash flow to those parents who you thought were okay. So you want to have start having some conversations about this. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk about some miscommunication with younger children. And then our parents, our take on our parents, kind of what I just went over a little bit, and maybe some siblings, and then some stories. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And as usual, you can talk to us live in the studio, or if you're not comfortable doing that, you can call and ask your question. Stay off air. You can give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and then I'll answer the question off air if you're a little shy about going on air. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So we're talking tonight about having conversations with your family about your financial situation. Family being spouses, parents, children, siblings. We're going to talk about the different relationships, some of the miscommunications that I've seen. Then I want to tell you about a few stories and why I think it's so important to have some open dialogue. I am just naturally that way. I love telling people stories. I love telling people my story. I'm not shy about doing that. For me, it's always been about if I share my story, someone else may benefit from it, whether it's a medical condition, a financial situation, experiences with my children. Sometimes I think it's just helps the community by sharing, and I feel like we get smarter faster that way when we share rather than having people kind of struggle along and feel all alone and by themselves. So I thought it was important to talk about this because when I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive, this is exactly what I'm talking about. If we're proactive and have these conversations up front, we can do a whole lot more planning around someone's financial choices, their financial circumstances, their financial decisions. Whereas if you don't have these conversations up front and we're left trying to unwind consequences that were not intended just because, you know, we weren't sharing properly. So we talked about some miscommunication issues that may happen between spouses who aren't sharing financial knowledge and circumstances. We've talked a little bit about what happens with adult children who may misinterpret their parents' financial situation or may be on both ends where they think their parents have more money, or situations where they're not aware that their parents don't have any money. Young children, this really even filters down to the young children in the home who may not understand the cost of things, the financial cost of things, their activities, their education, their junk that they have in the house. The children succumb to the same peer pressure that their parents fall victim to in trying to keep up with the Joneses. Are you having conversations with the kids about money? Do they realize that money saved today has the power to compound and will make a difference in managing your retirement or their eventual inheritance? That's a conversation as those young children get older. But if you start having conversations with the kids when they're younger about the cost of things, I think you're all going to be better situated later. And I will go through some examples of that as I move through the show here. Parents not having conversations with your children about needs and wants and financial situation. So parents, the miscommunication there is you want to make sure that you're talking to your kids when they're asking for things about differentiating between what is a need and what is a want, and perhaps even going as far as saying, this is the situation we're in. You know, mommy and daddy can't afford that right now. We want to save our money for our goals. You start talking about goals and giving them the vocabulary around their financial situation, their financial life. Siblings, we don't often talk to our siblings maybe about our financial situation. There are just certain topics that we don't always cover or broach with our family members. Why? I think it's important to at least have some understanding of siblings' financial circumstances is when it comes to taking care of our parents or perhaps even taking care of nieces and nephews. Perhaps you are a sibling who is not married and does not have children, and maybe you're wealthy and well-to-do. Maybe there's some assumptions by your siblings that they're going to inherit your assets or their children are going to inherit your assets. It would be nice, maybe, and it's not required that you disclose any of this to your siblings. I am just saying it helps with planning to be proactive and open to these conversations. Number one, if you plan to give your entire estate to charity and not to your siblings or your nieces and nephews, that would be maybe kind of nice to let them know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Perhaps you're the wealthy sibling, and then you have a poorer sibling, and mom and dad need lots of financial support. And once the poorer sibling may expect that the wealthier sibling is going to take care of mom and dad. Maybe you don't want to. Maybe you didn't have a good relationship with mom and dad. And there should be no expectation that you take care of them. Well, you want to make sure that someone knows that. Or perhaps you're the sibling who is doing all the caretaking and don't have the financial means to do so, but you have a sibling who does and they don't help at all. You might want to be a little open and honest about how you're feeling about that so that if they can help to some degree and it might be financial, maybe they can't be there physically taking care of mom and dad, but maybe they could provide a little financial support to give you a break from having to do that. So I think it's really, really important to have those conversations. Negative results of not having those conversations include overspending, taking on debt, bad investment decisions, and reactive financial choices. Positive results from the family perspective of having conversations about this may result in financial security and the ability to take more risk because of the additional security. There is a balance between when someone is able to take on a little bit more risk because they are stable, they have emergency reserves, they might be able to take more chances than someone who has to scrape by for every little penny. You have more options when you have, made proper financial decisions and have set yourself up with emergency reserves or the proper risk management kinds of situation. All right. So again, tonight we are talking about having conversations with your family about your financial situation. Some folks may be shy about doing that, so private they don't want to do it. And you have to kind of weigh that and balance that out with, are there going to be more positives out of it than negatives? And quite often, I see more positive results. When we come back from our break, we are going to talk about some stories that I have seen or am aware of that kind of play out this the consequences of the miscommunication or lack of communication. If you have questions, and it could be about having these kinds of conversations with your family, or where maybe you didn't and all of a sudden you were surprised and you want to kind of share your story or get some advice about something that happened, the phone number here is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. And Judy Ann is in the studio to take your call, 610-758-8810. So let me tell you a few stories. A married person significantly tapped their retirement account to help fund a son's rental property investments. He whittled down his retirement account. He passes away. He had a surviving spouse. This left very little resources for the surviving spouse. So as this was happening, let me tell you what was happening. I had noticed on the tax return, this was many, 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 many years ago, but I had noticed on the tax return that this person who had retired was taking significant amounts out of his retirement account, and it didn't seem to me that his cash flow needs would have warranted such large distributions out of his retirement account. And so I had noticed this probably, you know, a couple of years, and then I asked the question, and the answer was, I'm helping my kids. Okay, well, he seemed like he had plenty of resources, a pension, some other money, didn't have a lot of debt or expenses. Okay, that's a decision he can make, no problem. He's helping his kids. But this continued, and then I realized he was helping, and it could have been for other cash flow needs of the kids at some point. But finally, it was like, you know, it kept happening, and I said, you know, what's going on here? Because my concern was he was taking so many funds out of his retirement account that I was worried there wasn't going to be anything left in his retirement account, and then he would be relying solely on his pension and Social Security. And that's when he told me his son was making investments in rental properties, and these were great investments for his son. The only issue was I didn't see any of it coming back to this person. And that was my concern. Here's what ends up happening then. Number one, the father was paying significant amount of income taxes. So it wasn't just taking money out of his retirement account and depleting it for his future use or his survivor's future use. It was also to pay huge amount of income taxes. So that wasn't a very good strategy necessarily. The other thing that I saw happening was it was going to these investment properties that the son was making. Again, no money coming to the parent. So high taxes, depleting the retirement account, leaving less resources, fewer resources for the surviving spouse. So that was a little sad. But we finally, what I had said to him is, I said, you have to communicate with your son that you do not have unlimited resources and that this was costing you a lot of money. And he did eventually slow it down. So it was, it did allow some of that money to last for a bit. But I will tell you, the survivor ended up living a little bit more frugally, I think, than was planned, had to move in with the daughter. That was the other thing I was going to mention. Sometimes the survivors, the children, the heirs, will find out, oh, daddy was taking care of, you know, son so much, there's nothing left for daughter, or mom was taking care of daughter and didn't take care of son, and all of a sudden you may cause, you know, stress and conflict between the survivors as well. Okay, we had a call come in from Nancy, and I'm going to read Nancy's question. If you do have questions, folks, the lines are open, 610-758-8810. I know we missed a call, so please call back, 610-758-8810. Now, Nancy said she has two children. One does very well financially and the other not as financially successful. Don't know how to approach the topic of splitting assets equally or not. Should I talk about it with them or just wait and let them find out in the will? Nancy, this is exactly what I'm talking about, and I love that you're thinking about it ahead of time. Typically, what we might see, Nancy, is when there are two children, despite one being more financially successful than the other, quite often we will see the assets split 50-50. So in your will, you might say, to my two children equally. The benefit of a conversation might be to the one who might be very financially successful, depending on how close your children are. One might say, you know what, mom, I don't really need it. If you want to give more to my sibling, so be it. Sometimes you could do it other ways than in the will. You could actually do it with beneficiary designations on retirement accounts. Maybe you let an IRA go to the one who needs a little bit more help and still split the other remaining assets that would pass through the will. Those are assets that are in your name alone with no beneficiary designation, no joint titling. Maybe it's a bank account in your name alone. It has $100,000 in it. And you say, through my will, split evenly. That goes through the will. But your other accounts can go via beneficiary designation or asset titling. You could do transfer on death, something like that. You know your children. You might know why one was not as financially successful as the other. One, they both might have worked just as hard as each other. Both might have similar education. One might be an artist and one might be, you know, an executive. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be treated, you know, unequally, but there may be a case with this conversation where you may want to help one over the other. What I have seen, Nancy, and I was going to talk about this in one of my stories, is you might have one child who stayed close to home, who takes care of you, helps out, does the lawn, takes you here or there, travels with you, and maybe you do want to do something a little extra for that child. By all means, be open about those conversations. In my family, I'm one of six children, and I have one brother who stayed close to home, has done everything for my parents, my father until he passed away, and then since then has done everything for my mother. And the rest of us, we're all financially sound, and we have all agreed that, and my mother, we've had this conversation with my mother, we proposed it to mom. You know, mom, Mark's done everything for you. None of us really need your assets. You have a house. If you'd like to give that to Mark, by all means do it. And she was thrilled to hear us kind of allow her to do that. So sometimes it's having that conversation that helps. And then all the kids were on board with it. So there's no conflict with that. Everyone agrees. Now, I will say, remember we talked about making sure it's documented. Mom has to do a codicil to her will to make sure that brother gets the house or change titling, but you know, that's a whole nother estate planning issue. But we do want to make sure that it's documented and taken care of. But all of us have agreed, if mom doesn't get it done in time, we have all agreed that brother Mark will get the house because he's done everything. So Nancy, I hope that helps. And I think it would help to kind of talk about it and kind of get the feeling. And it might be better to have that little discussion with the financially successful one maybe a little bit more. Like, how would you feel? If you think you need to have that, Nancy, frankly, you can do whatever you want. Why I like people to have the conversation is I don't like the conflict after someone has died to have siblings fighting over silly things like this. If everyone knows about it up front, it just makes that ride after you're gone a little smoother. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're at the halfway mark. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert on WDIY Allentown. The time is 6:31. Our Lehigh Valley weather, currently 91 degrees, going down to a low of 71 tonight. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 40% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 11 a.m. Partly sunny with a high near 92. It's going to be a hot one again tomorrow and Friday. Friday's high is 92 as well. Thursday night, we have a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, low of 71. Friday, both day and night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Friday's high, 92. The low is 70. Saturday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 3 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 91. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 9 p.m., with a low around 67 degrees. And now back to Lori Siebert and Your Financial Choices.
Thank you, John. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. What are we talking about tonight? We're talking about having conversations with your family members, whether they're spouses, adult children, young children, siblings, or our parents. Have those conversations around some financially related topics. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I can take questions live, on air, or off air, whatever is more comfortable for you. So let me continue with some stories. I had encountered a couple who had been in a long-term relationship, had finally married. The husband had children from a prior relationship. Documents were drafted to take care of the new spouse. Remember, they were in a long-term relationship, so had been together years and years and years and years, but had finally married, were married for maybe, I don't know, I don't remember off the top of my head, a few years. Husband dies. Young couple. Husband dies. The new wife finds out the documents were never executed. The documents that they had agreed where he was going to take care of her were never executed. Now the new wife has to elect against the will for some share of the estate because the husband never executed the documents. So there were some assets that had her named as a beneficiary. He had had life insurance where he named the children as beneficiaries, so that helped take care of the kids. He had some retirement accounts where the wife was named a beneficiary. That took care of her in some regard. But there was this whole bucket of assets that were in his name alone with no beneficiary designation, no joint titling, not retirement accounts. And who did this belong to? Well, it's in his estate. We look to the will. The will is his old will, not the current the document that had been drafted but had never been executed. So the wife ended up having to elect against the will, in essence. And it caused issues with, you know, the stepchildren and the family, and it just wasn't pleasant. So to my point about having these conversations, when you promise each other this is what we're going to do, you might want to verify and confirm that it was done. All right. Ray called in off air. Ray's question, distributions from a traditional IRA. Is there an age or an opportune time to take the distribution and roll it into a Roth IRA? He is 55 now. Ray, great question. What you want to think about before you do conversions from an IRA, a traditional IRA, to a Roth IRA, are taxes, income taxes, and tax brackets. So briefly, let me tell folks, a traditional IRA is a retirement savings vehicle that you have put money into that you have received a deduction on your tax return for. Therefore, you have not paid taxes on this money. You got a deduction, did not pay taxes, and let's pretend I put in $10,000 into an IRA over, 3 years, and I always got a deduction on my return, and it saved income taxes. Now that $10,000 has grown to $15,000 after so many years, and I'd like to take it out. Well, now if I take out the $15,000, I'm going to pay income tax on the $15,000 or whatever amount I take out. The whole, as it comes out, whatever I take out is going to be income taxable. The first problem, Ray, is if you're under age 59 and a half, you're going to pay income tax and a 10% penalty. So if you want to keep money in traditional IRA and take it out eventually for your retirement needs, you want to wait till age 59 and a half or later, or if there's an exception to taking it out. But there is something else we can do called a conversion to a Roth IRA. That conversion to a Roth IRA, the IRS says, yeah, there's penalties and taxes due when you take money out early. But if you're under age 59 and a half and you actually want to take the money from the IRA and put it into a Roth IRA, we're going to have you pay the income taxes, but that will be an exception to the 10% penalty. We're going to let you do that whenever, because that way the IRS gets their taxes early. So, Ray, if you're going to take money out of a traditional IRA, one that you did not pay tax on yet, and you realize you're going to pay taxes on it today, then when you take it out, you want to make sure that when you pay the taxes, you're in a lower tax bracket than you would be in the future. So if you told me that for the rest of your life you're going to be in a 0% tax bracket, it doesn't matter if you convert or not. If you told me if you were going to be in a 15% tax bracket today and the rest of your life, it would not matter if you convert or not. In essence, I'm generalizing, but same thing with 25%, because if you're always going to be in the same tax bracket today, if you paid the tax, then a smaller amount is going to grow in the Roth IRA and grow, and then you're going to have, it's going to be tax-free earnings and growth in the future, but it may be a smaller amount. One strategy people will use to make sure that they maximize the Roth conversion is if they have other monies on the sidelines to pay the income tax on the converted amount. So if I'm going to convert $15,000 and it's going to cost 20% average tax, that's $3,000 tax, if I have to take the tax out of the IRA then and on my conversion, then I'm only converting $12,000. And if you have to take the money out of the IRA to pay the tax, I'll have a 10% penalty on that too. So I'm going to pay the tax on it and have a 10% penalty. So you want to make sure that if you're going to do this kind of strategy, it's always good to have the taxes on the sidelines. So let's say I have $3,000 in the bank. I convert $15,000 from the traditional IRA to the Roth. I pay the taxes of $3,000 today. My average tax bracket in my example was 20%. And maybe when I retire, I know I'm going to have a huge pension and an inheritance and huge investment accounts, and I'm going to be in the 25% tax bracket. Well, then that would have been a good decision, because now the Roth is, I took the money out and paid 20% instead of in the future 25%. So you kind of have to do some projections. Bottom line, you want to look to see if you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you're paying the tax on a conversion than you will be in the future. I hope that helps. Long explanation, but sometimes I have to give some framework for the question. So, Ray, I hope that helped. Ray, another time where people can look at these is sometimes what we'll have elderly people now who might still have big IRAs, and now they're in nursing homes and they're paying huge amounts for nursing care and they're in a 0% tax bracket. Sometimes you want to do conversions for elderly people if they're going to pay zero tax, and that Roth that has now been converted from the IRA is going to go to my beneficiaries or my heirs. That's a really good planning point as well. Or if you know you're going to have huge losses on your tax return for some reason, maybe you have some passive investments like rental properties and you're going to sell them and you're going to have huge losses that are freed up, that might be a time where you want to look at it. But I always suggest that you project those numbers so that you're not surprised. All right. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about conversations to have about your financial situation with family members and how it can make such a difference in your planning. Planning for yourself, planning for them, etc. Let me give you another example. Parents had was funding the son and grandson's living expenses. They were living with the parent. They didn't work. Parents giving them all this money, writing checks for cash, that kind of thing. Parent doesn't have the funds available at this point in the future after doing this for years and years to pay the homeowner's insurance. They're tight on money. They don't pay the homeowner's insurance. There was a catastrophic event, no insurance. With no insurance, couldn't cover the repairs that were required to continue to live in the house. All of a sudden, another sibling had to get involved. Is that fair? Should that other sibling, who has the financial means to help bail out the parent to necessitate these repairs, is it really their responsibility? That was that's something you want to make sure you know if your parent might be influenced by other family members or relatives or neighbors. You never know who might be influencing them. What if you have a child who's married and you love the daughter or son-in-law and you name them both in your will? I've seen this. But actually, they don't get along that well. They're having marital difficulty. So here you have your will. You name, you know, daughter and son-in-law or son and daughter-in-law, you know, because maybe they don't have children and you don't have any other kids and that's it. So you name them. And they're actually having marital difficulties. And you don't have time to update your document before you die. Now everything goes to the in-law and they leave your child. That's not a good end result. So be open with your parents about your relationships. Another case, ultra wealthy parents with wealthy children and grandchildren who are just starting out. If you don't understand each other's estate planning, it might cost the family significant taxes that may have been avoided. Discussions about the wants and needs of family members can help with the estate planning for each generation. So in that example, I've got, you know, wealthy children with ultra wealthy parents, and the wealthy children don't understand the ultra wealthy parents' documents. And I said, well, you understand you may be able to disclaim, meaning you're so wealthy, you don't need the money. Maybe you want it to go right to your children. Well, if you don't understand your parents' documents, it may not go right to your children if you disclaim. There's a special strategy you can use saying, I don't want it, and if I don't want it, you can't name who it goes to. It has to follow who that person would have given it to. So typically what we say, if I say to my children, and if my children has predeceased me, then to their children, we call that per stirpes. If my documents say that and my children say, hey, I don't need it, and my document says, well, if my child doesn't need it, it goes to my grandchildren, that's where that disclaimer language works really, really well. But if I never tell my kids that it's going to go to the grandchildren, if not them, they may not, you know, be able to plan their own estate planning properly. It could throw them in a pickle. So you want to make sure you understand a parent's wishes. That is more important when we're talking about big things like federal estate taxes to the tune of 40%. That's where that becomes really, really important, passing down to the next generation. It's a little bit more sophisticated estate planning, but always a good discussion to kind of know if you can pass things on to the next generation if you really don't need it. Folks, if you have questions, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about having conversations with family members about your financial situation. One other item I did want to point out, too, when we talk to our parents, possibly, about their documents, do they have a will, that type of thing, and I'm going to go through some of these questions to ask, but one thing I want to make sure I cover was, again, people don't always update their documents or refresh them. And at some point you were a kid or a minor or a young adult and your parent may not have thought you were responsible enough to be their executor or trustee or power of attorney. But you are 45 years old now and very capable, possibly. You might want to have a conversation with your parents to see if they have updated their documents recently, because they might still name Uncle Jerry as the executor, and Uncle Jerry could be 85 years old, and it could be that Uncle Jerry lives in another state, he moved to Florida, he's in a nursing home. So you also kind of want to have those conversations about who is the person who's going to be the executor or the power of attorney, and, you know, are they trustworthy? Are they going to follow your wishes and the document's wishes? Should there be more than one executor? Are there two children or two siblings who should act together to kind of balance checks and balances, that kind of thing? So how do we have conversations about this? I have always said you can always start from your own perspective. So, for example, I might say to my parents, hey, Mom and Dad, husband and I are realizing that we've accumulated some assets now, our accounts are building up. What are we supposed to do? How do these assets pass? Do you have a will? Do you have an attorney? What's a power of attorney? I've heard people talk about these. You'll get a pretty good sense of your parents' situation if they say, oh, I don't know, I don't have one, or, oh, we didn't do that, or we didn't think we needed one, or, oh, yeah, we did that. Oh, our attorney's been long gone. He retired 30 years ago. So sometimes you asking the questions from your own perspective will help open the dialogue to have with them. Questions such as, who is your power of attorney? In fact, where is the power of attorney document? If something happens to Mom and Dad, who's going to step in and help with the finances, write the checks, pay the bills? Who's going to do that? Is it the sibling who's local, or is it the sibling that they named 10 years ago when they were local that has now moved to California? So you want to always go back and refresh and be familiar. Again, no one he's required to necessarily tell you any of this. It certainly helps, though. So who's your power of attorney? Do you have a will? Do you have a power of attorney? Do you have a living will? Health directives? Mom and dad, what if something happens to you? You're in a car accident. Do you want us to withhold life-sustaining, you know, measures? Or do you want us to try everything we possibly can? You want them to go through that with an attorney so that you know their wishes. One of the things that I have had parents tell me is that one child will want to do everything possible to keep them living, and the other child says, hey, if it's not a good quality of life and they're, you know, pretty much gone, we're going to let them go. Very different perspectives from very different, you know, from different children. So as a parent, you're going to want to make sure that the child that's going to follow your wishes might be the one that gets appointed. So you want to get those documents taken care of, updated, make sure that everything's covered if something happens to you. You might say, Mom, Dad, how can I help you? Is there anything you need? Do you have your documents done? Do you need my help with that? I have a good attorney. You want to be careful not to influence them a particular way, like Mom and Dad leave everything to me and not to sibling B because they're good for nothing. So be careful of that, and usually a very good attorney will take the parent alone by themselves and make sure that they are aware of their faculties and all of that. So, but you can still have these conversations. We should talk to the other kids. Hey, Mom and Dad, you say you want to take care of me extra special because I've done so much for you and I've helped you out all these years. Well, I'm a little uncomfortable with that because what about the other kids? They're going to think maybe I influenced you. Can we have an open conversation with that with the sibs at Thanksgiving or at Christmas or something? Great time to talk about these things at the holidays. Mom and Dad, did you know that your will doesn't necessarily cover all your assets? Mom and Dad sometimes might start saying things as they get older. You know, everything's going to you kids evenly. Well, Mom and Dad might have had a life insurance policy where they named, the first child as the beneficiary of the life insurance policy and never updated it after they had the next five kids. Life insurance policy, it's not going to be evenly through the kids. It's going to be according to that beneficiary designation. So if they have retirement accounts, you want to make sure they understand that the retirement accounts with named beneficiaries are going to go outside of their estate. And if they name their estate the beneficiary of some of these, thinking, oh, I'm going to make it easy, everything's through my will, and I'm going to name the estate on everything, they need to understand that that could cause some major income tax consequences, some really big tax consequences. So again, having these conversations, putting more minds together than one, you might actually get more appropriate answers or guidance by the experiences that more than one of you have had. Talking to your siblings. Hey, sibs, do you realize sis does everything for Mom? Or in my case, the brother does so much for Mom. How's she going to be rewarded for this? Or how is he going to be rewarded for this? Or is there something we can do, you know, with for that sibling who's doing everything? It just doesn't seem fair that the five of us, you know, live all over the country and that one stayed closed and does everything. Questions, how is Mom affording all that she does? Sometimes kids will find out that the mom was putting everything on credit cards or did a reverse mortgage and didn't talk to anybody. And then, boy, oh boy, are you surprised when she's gone. Maybe other siblings are helping out. Do you mind? Can you afford it? Maybe one sibling feels really resentful to the others because they're doing everything. And they don't realize that Mom maybe never, or Dad, never asked for any help from the other siblings. Are you a joint owner on an account with Mom or Dad? Do you know that that has a different consequence for the estate than assets that are passing through their will? If there's a joint with rights of survivorship on an account with Mom or Dad, and maybe it's $100,000 and Mom and I are joint on it, by law, that account becomes mine. It might not get split amongst the siblings, and then you're relying on the, And that might be how Mom wanted it, maybe, because maybe I was doing everything for Mom. But maybe the siblings all thought they were going to get a piece of that $100,000 account. If there's 10 kids, $100,000, they think they're going to get $10,000 each, when in fact they may not be entitled to anything. So you want to know what assets pass outside the estate. What are you doing for Mom and Dad to warrant their continued financial help? Maybe you're someone who keeps mooching off of Mom and Dad. Or Mom and Dad, you have one of the kids who keeps mooching off of you. Maybe you need to have a discussion about that, kind of cut them off. Again, do Mom and Dad's documents equalize the siblings for what one or more may have received during lifetime? So that kind of goes back to Nancy's phone call. The documents might equalize siblings, not from an asset factor, but from maybe the help that they were given. It could be a specific dollar amount. We might say, I give $10,000 to daughter, and the balance of my estate is shared equally. Something to kind of take care of that one who may have done a little bit more. Children, first we want to take opportunities to discuss financial matters with children as they arise. For example, younger children in the grocery store explain what marketing is. It teaches them to be informed skeptics. Show them how you weigh a purchase decision. At birthday time or Christmas time, explain that they don't get everything they ask for. When my children were little and would make their list for Santa, we told them they could only expect two items from the wish list, not saying which two they might get. So my children might have had a list of five, but we told them, nope, Santa's only going to bring two of those gifts. I know some families who will buy their children everything on the list, or Santa brings everything. You don't have to live that way. Set expectations and have some control over it. There are lots of resources available on the internet as well. I always like going to government resources, and there were a couple that I looked at. One was the Elder Locator, a public service of the Administration on Aging, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It's a nationwide service that connects older Americans and their caregivers with information on senior services. And it had a paper, which I thought had some great information. It said, face the facts. Financial, legal, health care, and long-term care issues affect families, not just individuals. Aging parents may not understand how estate planning can affect their own financial status as well as that of their children. And they produced a guide to help families face the facts about important topics to discuss with aging parents. And it addresses areas of concern, suggested questions to ask, and ways in which families might initiate conversations. So talking about cash flow, what benefits do Mom and Dad have? Do they have a pension? Do they have Social Security? Hey, about pensions, a lot of people will think Mom and Dad are doing okay because Dad's got that great pension. But do you know what pension election Dad chose? Because if Dad chose single life, then when he's gone, his pension is gone as well. And then Mom doesn't have the same cash flow that you thought she had. And a lot of people are surprised to find that maybe that pension election wasn't what they thought. Sometimes it's a 50% survivor option. Sometimes it's 100%. It's those single life options that can be really a little bit scary. So you want to make sure what kind of resources they have. There was also a tool from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau with conversation starters for children. It's called Money As You Grow, and there's tools on their website, so you can just Google Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Money As You Grow, and they talk about having conversations for little ones, and I had pulled up one for the teen years, which were 13 to 21, talking about when they first get their job, looking at that pay stub, help explaining what are the taxes that are coming out, you know, Social Security, the Medicare tax for when they're older, federal tax, state tax, local tax. you kind of go over the paycheck, you talk about a W-4, you explain to them about saving money and having a goal and how they can save this money for different goals. I keep telling my son who's working, and I say, work as many hours as you can get. And then you can set up an investment account and do a Roth IRA, my favorite thing. So these are kinds of the conversations that you can have with your kids, and tools are out there and available. So bottom line, open lines of communication at each generation to maximize results for the family and avoid stress, resentment, and financial calamity. Positive choices and coordinated efforts generally provide the best results. I hope the show was helpful. And next week, we're going to talk about understanding employer retirement plans and your options. I want to thank John for being here. Thanks, Judy Ann, for filling in. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller with In Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.